Care Navigator. You're with me on The Caring Generation, the only program of its kind caring to make your life easier by tackling uncomfortable and intimidating discussions about aging, caregiving, and everything in between. Caregiving is a two-way street. I'm here to help you begin the conversation. If you're looking for solutions to a care or caregiving issue, not sure what to do, call me at 303-810-1816, 303-810-1816. You can also send an email to me at info@thecarenavigator.com, info@thecarenavigator.com, or visit my website, thecarenavigator.com. Naomi Rogers is a medical historian and associate professor of history and medicine at Yale University. She's also the author of Dirt and Disease, Polio Before FDR. And we're here and going to talk about polio. Dr. Rogers, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pamela. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. When the polio epidemic first began in 1916, what did physicians and public health experts initially believe the cause?
Well, they knew that it was a germ disease, because a polio germ, or we would say virus, had been established just a couple of years earlier. Unfortunately, the assumptions around identifying a germ did not help them control the disease, because they were unable to identify with confidence who was infected and who was not, other than when paralytic symptoms appeared. But they did know that it was a germ disease in 1916.
Polio initially seemed to be a childhood disease, and I was doing some research on the Internet, and it said that towns actually posted signs saying that children under 16 weren't allowed to enter. What ideas existed in looking at the disease back then and looking at children from different social statuses and backgrounds being the cause?
Well, there was enormous fear, and when I say that, it wasn't just 1916, a fear of families with hidden infection, and especially associated with children who might at any moment develop symptoms of the disease, was a widespread fear. And certainly, really, until the 1950s, the majority of new cases of polio were among children, usually from about the ages 2 to maybe 10 or 11. So that they certainly, you know, everyone had good reason for fearing children and for worrying that families were harboring infection that then might spread to your family.
And in your book called Dirt and Disease, you mentioned the fact that the researchers had very limited thinking, and that they were thinking that there were three causes of transmission of polio. What did they eventually learn about that?
Well, it's an interesting question about what researchers were willing to consider and what they were not. Polio certainly is a germ or viral disease, and it is indeed spread by human contact, and the researchers were well aware of what the possibilities of human contact were, droplet infection, flies, or occasionally cats or dogs were targeted as possible carriers, and of course water or food or some other kind of substance that was spreading the disease. But because they could not confidently find the germ in any of these means of transmission, they really were at a loss, and it's a kind of a scattershot effort, especially by public health officials. One of the things that I point out, which I think of as limited thinking, is that no researcher in 1916 was willing to consider the evidence that was available in epidemiological surveys, which showed that families from good neighborhoods, well cared for children, families with good hygiene, were also victims, identifiable victims of the disease. And in order to explain this, researchers looked for ways that the disease had entered that family, perhaps a nursemaid from a bad neighborhood, a dangerous cat or dog, flies, and so on. In fact, we look at that evidence now and we say, this is an example that suggests that children who were in fact better cared for were had in fact been protected from an earlier immunity with the virus and therefore were more likely to be affected when the virus came around as it did in 1916. But that way of thinking that dirt itself can ironically offer a kind of protection was simply not an option for researchers in 1916.
And to your point, in 1921, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president, contracted polio. And although he acknowledged it publicly, he really kind of concealed the extent of his disability. For people who don't know, how does polio affect the body?
Okay, well, those are really interesting questions. Roosevelt certainly openly talked about how he had had polio, but he presented this as a disability he had overcome. And after going down to Warm Springs and really gaining additional strength, especially in his upper body, that enabled him to, let's just say, learn ways of pretending to walk. He never could walk, but he was able to put braces on his legs and then lean on the arms of, say, his sons or other people. He was able to return to public life, and he presented himself actually as someone who'd overcome polio, which was a very exciting a symbol for many disabled people with polio and other diseases who dreamt of being able to overcome it in the same way that Roosevelt suggested he was. Roosevelt went further than that. He also became a patron of polio, a patron of polio fundraising and polio research, and helped to raise a lot of money and really make it a kind of America's disease during the 1930s and 40s. When Roosevelt died in 1945, the March of Dimes was very concerned that it had lost its patron, its White House patron, but it nonetheless continued and instead called Roosevelt a founder of polio fundraising. The disease itself is a combination of neurological and blood. It enters the body through the blood, not through the nerves, and usually travels down to the intestines. And if you're lucky, especially if you're pretty young, you may have maternal antibodies that fight it there, and then you really get no symptoms at all. But if you're unlucky, then the virus will travel along the blood up to the spinal column and the brain. And as it does that, this is the reason that people develop paralysis.
And I've got time for one more quick question. For people who weren't alive at the time, can you compare polio to, like, the AIDS epidemic?
Well, I have to admit that the reason that I wrote the book Dirt and Disease, which came out in 1992, is that I was looking for analogies between the 1916 epidemic, in which it seemed to me no one really quite understood what was going on, to the early years of the AIDS epidemic, which I, and I continue to find analogies. I feel that now, as AIDS itself is really more has become a chronic pandemic, not that it's not an infectious disease, but that more often you have people who are living with AIDS and dealing with AIDS. That in fact, this really does also define what happened with polio. The last big epidemic was in 1952, and certainly created a huge generation of people who were disabled in some way by polio. And then just 2 years later, Jonas Salk developed a vaccine. There's an interesting element of patients who call themselves the last generation of people who actually got polio around the time that the vaccine was being developed, or even when it had been approved by the U.S. government but was not widely available. So people did certainly still get polio and become disabled. And now what we have is a much older disabled generation. And I'd want to add to that that by the 1980s, many people who really had imbibed Roosevelt's notion of overcoming their disease began to realize with horror that they were experiencing new, well, not so much new, familiar symptoms that they hadn't experienced in many, many years. And this was the beginning of the identification of the post-polio syndrome, in which people argue now that, that to some extent some of the harsher physical therapy efforts to, you know, do, you know, 10 more exercises in order to really exhaust one muscle in order to try to get your strength back has actually weakened for many people as they age. And many people are becoming more disabled after an adult life in which they really were able to hide or minimize a disability.
Dr. Rogers, I thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
If you would like more information about Dr. Rogers, her information and information about the book Dirt and Disease is available on our website at thecaringgeneration.com. There's also a link to information provided by the Smithsonian Institute and their research. It's called Whatever Happened to Polio. I'm Pamela Wilson. This is The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. Whether you're a caregiver or a person needing care, facing an unexpected situation, or if you're interested in education to help you live a healthier and more informed life, you're in the right place with The Caring Generation every Sunday from 10 to noon. Visit our website, thecaringgeneration.com, for more information. Up next, more from Dr. Jack Kauf and talk about ways to find solutions to common caregiving challenges.